It feels like there is this universal hum in the background of modern life. Like it's this low-level, just constant static that just whispers, you are not enough.
Yeah.
You don't have enough. You aren't doing enough. You just fundamentally, you are not enough.
Right.
And I was reading through our materials today for this deep dive, specifically chapter 3 of the RAFT program. And it hit me that this exact feeling, this static, is basically the engine behind so much of human misery.
It really is. It's the core of it.
Because when you feel that emptiness, you instinctively reach for something to fill it, right?
Yeah.
You grasp.
Yeah.
And that grasping leads straight into craving. It leads into reactivity and, you know, into these deeply entrenched self-defeating habits.
Yeah.
But the text we're looking at today claims to have the precise antidote to that static.
It does. And it frames that antidote in an incredibly visual way. To understand how Chapter 3 fits into everything, we kind of have to look at the broader framework of the RAFT program.
Right, because it's a piece of a larger puzzle.
Exactly. It yeah. uses this really evocative metaphor of a journey. So I want you to imagine you are standing on the dangerous shore of suffering and disappointment.
Okay.
It is a chaotic, painful place, and it's heavily characterized by those exact patterns of avoidance and craving you just mentioned.
Like just being stuck in the mud.
Yeah. Exactly. But across the water, there is the safe shore of freedom.
Mm.
And the entire program is built on the acronym RAFT, which stands for Recognize, Abandon, Feel, Train.
Recognize, Abandon, Feel, Train. Got
right.
it.
And it's a structured step-by-step approach
right.
to navigating from that painful shore to the safe one.
But the water in between is rough, right? Like you can't just dive in and try to swim across on sheer willpower alone.
No.
The currents of our self-defeating habits are just, they're way too strong for that.
Precisely. You need a vessel to keep you afloat. And you have to build it yourself, piece by piece, plank by plank. And that is what Chapter 3 is specifically focusing on. It's the actual construction of this vessel. We are gathering the materials to survive the crossing.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because this is the core of today's deep dive.
Yeah.
If we are standing on the shoreline, right, and we're just desperate to get across, what is the very first material we reach for? Because I would assume...
Well, the program is very deliberate about moving past that superficial sort of transactional definition. We aren't just talking about giving away physical items.
Okay.
We are talking about cultivating a fundamentally open-hearted way of being. There is this powerful quote in the text from Gautama the Buddha. On first mention, well, in the Dana Sutta, he said, if beings knew, as I know, the results of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given, nor would the stain of miserliness overcome their minds.
Wow. The stain of miserliness.
Yeah.
That is such a vivid phrase.
Yeah.
It implies that, like, holding back or clinging really tightly to what we have, it actually leaves a mark on us, like a physical stain.
It absolutely does. I mean, yeah. think about the physical sensation of craving or grasping. What does your body actually do?
Well, everything tenses up.
You yeah. know?
You get tunnel vision. You're just totally locked in on whatever it is you think you need in that moment.
Right. It is a profound contraction. Your entire world shrinks down to the size of your own suffering. So generosity is the deliberate mechanical antidote to that exact tightness.
Oh, I see.
It is the intentional opening of the hands, the heart, and the mind to life itself. You cannot simultaneously clench your fist in craving and open your hand in generosity. The two states are physically and psychologically incompatible.
Okay, hold on. I have to stop you there.
Yeah.
Because if I'm listening to this and I am currently drowning in my own pain,
okay.
like barely keeping my head above water with my own patterns of avoidance.
Right.
Telling me to go be generous to someone else sounds genuinely exhausting.
Oh, totally.
I mean, I don't have anything left to give.
Yeah.
It feels like you're asking me to pour water from a completely empty cup.
And that is a completely natural reaction. If you are exhausted, the idea of giving more of yourself feels impossible. But the RAFT program addresses this with a really crucial reframing.
Okay.
Think of a sailor preparing for a voyage. That sailor has to meticulously tend to their own vessel first. If their own boat is full of holes, they can't navigate the waters, and they certainly can't rescue anyone else who might be struggling out there.
Oh, right. It's like the classic airplane safety rule. Put your own oxygen mask on before assisting others.
Exactly. Generosity must be offered to ourselves first.
Wow.
That is the first plank. We have to offer ourselves care, forgiveness, patience, and the willingness to just, you know, start again when we stumble. If you are struggling with a self-defeating habit, the very first act of generosity is meeting your own suffering with kindness instead of harsh judgment. This isn't selfishness, right? It is necessary self-compassion.
That reframing, that changes everything for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because usually when we fall back into reactivity, the voice in our head is incredibly punitive. It is mean.
Oh, absolutely brutal.
We think we have to like punish ourselves into better behavior. We try to shame ourselves out of our cravings. But the program is saying, no, you lay down the plank of self-generosity first, and suddenly you actually have something solid to stand on.
Precisely. And once you have that foundation, you have to start binding the raft together. Ah. I mean, you don't just stack loose wood and hope for the best, right?
Right, you just sink.
Right. So the acts of giving act as the ropes holding the structure intact. And the text calls these ropes the appropriate responses.
Okay. What does that actually mean in practice? Appropriate responses sounds a little bit academic. What are we actually tying this raft together with?
Well, they are essentially four qualities of the heart. So that's compassion, friendliness, appreciative joy, and equanimity. Plus, they're self-directed versions, of course.
Okay, let's break those down. Compassion and friendliness are fairly straightforward, I think, but what is appreciative joy?
So appreciative joy is the ability to be genuinely happy for someone else's success or good fortune without feeling envious or, you know, making it about your own lack.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's tough.
It is, but it is the direct opposite of that not enough static we talked about.
Right.
And then equanimity is the ability to maintain a balanced, calm mind, even when the waters get incredibly rough. It serves as this internal anchor.
Okay, so these emotional states are the ropes. And the text also mentions something called the five gifts of ethical living, acting as the planks underneath those ropes. How does ethical living tie into this idea of giving? Because usually I feel like ethics are framed as rules you aren't allowed to break, not gifts you give.
That is a beautiful distinction, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The program completely flips the script on ethics. Instead of seeing them as rigid constraints, they are viewed as profound acts of generosity. The five gifts involve committing to safety, non-harm, and integrity toward others.
But how do you give someone safety or non-harm? That sounds like the absence of an action rather than an active gift.
Well, think about what it feels like to be around someone who is deeply reactive, someone who lashes out when they don't get their way.
Oh, you have to walk on eggshells around them.
Right. Your nervous system is constantly on high alert. By choosing to live ethically, by managing your own reactivity and choosing non-harm, you are giving everyone around you the gift of relief.
Wow.
You are giving them an environment where they don't have to defend themselves against you. You are giving the gift of fearlessness and goodwill.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me, because I've never thought about basic emotional regulation as an act of public philanthropy, but that makes total sense. And this isn't just ancient philosophy talking, right? I noticed the program brings in some hard science to back up why this open-handed approach actually changes us.
What's fascinating here is that modern psychology and neuroscience are increasingly proving what these wisdom traditions, like the teachings of Gautama, have understood for millennia.
Right.
Acts of generosity literally reshape the physical structures of our brains.
Wait, really? Are you telling me my brain actually gets a better chemical reward from giving something away than it does from giving in to a craving? Because when a craving hits, it feels like the most important, urgent thing in the world.
It feels incredibly urgent, but neurologically, it is a trap. The program references studies on pro-social behavior, specifically looking at the brain's reward circuitry, and it notes how entirely different regions light up when we grasp versus when we give.
Okay, so what happens when we grasp?
When you give into a craving, your brain receives a massive but incredibly brief spike of pleasure. It is a fleeting dopamine hit.
It's like the sugar rush of the mind.
Exactly. And like any sugar rush, it comes with a crash. It leaves you depleted, more stressed, and wanting more. It just fuels the cycle of suffering.
Right.
But when you engage in intentional giving, it activates entirely different neural pathways. Pathways associated with sustained reward, oxytocin release, and social bonding. It is like a deeply nutritious meal for your nervous system compared to that sugar rush.
Oh, I love that analogy.
Generosity is shown to physically lower cortisol levels, which reduces chronic stress and increases your baseline of subjective happiness. So by practicing these appropriate responses, you are literally wiring your brain to be more resilient.
So the mechanics of the raft aren't just a metaphor. They are literally the rewiring of our neural pathways.
Yes.
That is incredible. But let's bring this down to earth for a second. Let's say it's a random Tuesday. I'm late for work, I spilled coffee on my shirt, I'm stressed, and I can feel those old patterns of avoidance creeping in.
We've all had that Tuesday.
Exactly. How do I practice generosity in that exact moment? Because the program says we build this, quote, day by day, plank by plank, across six dimensions of daily life.
And that's the beauty of this framework. It translates high-level philosophy into highly actionable moments. It provides six specific dimensions where you can deliberately lay down a plank no matter how chaotic your Tuesday is.
Okay, let's actually walk through what a day looks like using these dimensions. So I wake up on this terrible Tuesday. I realize I've overslept. My immediate instinct is to start aggressively berating myself. Like, you're so lazy, you're always messing up.
And right there is your very first opportunity. The first dimension is self-generosity. Instead of that harsh self-criticism, you pause. You offer yourself the generosity of letting it go. You don't excuse the behavior, but you meet it with patience. You allow yourself to reset without having to sort of pay for the mistake through guilt.
Okay, so I've forgiven myself for the alarm. I'm out the door, I'm commuting, and someone cuts me off in traffic. Normally I'd yell, maybe harbor that anger for the next hour, just plotting out imaginary arguments in my head.
Right, and here you encounter the verbal and emotional dimension of generosity.
Which means what, just bottling it up, let them win?
No, it means consciously choosing a kind inner dialogue or outward response instead of feeding the hostility. It's speaking kind words to those who challenge you. Or, you know, in a more personal relationship, it is the act of offering genuine encouragement.
And this dimension includes apologies, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The program specifically mentions apologizing when you are wrong without defensiveness. And I have to say, that is physically painful to do.
Oh, it requires a massive laying down of the ego.
It really does. Because it requires superhuman strength to not sneak a little excuse in there. We always want to say, I'm sorry I snapped at you, but you, Beauty, I was just so stressed. Or, butty, you were being really annoying.
Yes, the infamous but.
Stripping away that but, dropping the defense mechanism entirely, and just offering a clean, sincere apology. I mean, that leaves you totally exposed. But it is a profound act of emotional generosity.
Right.
Because you are validating the other person's reality at the direct expense of your own ego's comfort.
It is incredibly difficult, but it strengthens the binding of your raft immensely.
Yeah.
Now let's continue your Tuesday. You finally make it to work. You go to buy a coffee.
Right. That brings in the third area, which is material generosity. And this one is easy. I pay for the coffee of the person in line behind me anonymously, or maybe I share my lunch with a coworker who forgot theirs. It is the active, physical sharing of resources.
Precisely. Simple, but effective. And then you get to your desk, a colleague comes over, they are clearly having a really rough time, and they just start venting to you. But you have a mountain of emails to get through.
This is the dimension of time and presence. And honestly, in a world of just constant distraction, giving someone your undivided attention is basically a superpower. The generous act here is closing my laptop, putting my phone face down, and actively listening without interrupting.
And crucially, listening without formulating your own response while they're still talking.
Oh, guilty.
Just being fully present as a witness to their experience.
Which naturally bleeds into the fifth dimension, which is community and interpersonal generosity.
Yeah.
Because as that colleague is venting, they mention feeling completely isolated in their struggle, like nobody understands.
And how do you respond generously there?
Well, by sharing my own experience, by saying, I've been there too. The program talks about how sharing your own healing story offers immense hope. It breaks that illusion that they are the only one struggling on that dangerous shore. About inclusion, right? Inviting someone into the fold so they aren't alone.
Yes, it is the sharing of your common humanity. But what happens if that colleague is facing a struggle that you cannot relate to at all, or an obstacle that you simply cannot fix for them?
Oh, man. That is the hardest part. The urge to fix things for people is so strong.
It is.
But that brings us to the sixth and final dimension, spiritual and ethical generosity.
Yes. Sometimes the most generous thing you can do is simply hold someone in silent friendliness. It involves offering kind wishes for their well-being, even if you can't actively change their circumstances. Just bearing witness with a heart that genuinely wishes them well is a profound plank to lay down.
When you look at it through the lens of those six dimensions, self, time, material, verbal, community, and spiritual, you realize you have dozens of opportunities every single day to gather materials. Mm. You're never really stuck without resources to build your raft because generosity isn't dependent on your bank account, you know, it's dependent on your attention.
Exactly. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, looking at the evolutionary psychology driving this, because the program does delve into the philosophy of why this works so well, we see that generosity is not a transaction. You are not putting a coin into a vending machine expecting good karma to fall out. Generosity is the lived, physical recognition of our interdependence.
Interdependence, meaning we literally cannot survive in isolation.
Exactly. From a purely evolutionary biology standpoint, early humans didn't survive because they had sharp claws or thick armor. They survived because they cooperated. Pro-social, generous acts fostered the trust required to build communities. When you give, you strengthen the ties that hold the tribe together. But when you grasp or engage in patterns of avoidance, you isolate yourself. In the Buddhist tradition, the fellowship formed through this shared intention is called the Sangha.
Like a community of fellow travelers.
Yes. Shared generosity creates the camaraderie needed to navigate the roughest waters. You don't have to build your vessel alone, and you certainly don't have to sail it alone. Mutual support is what allows us to cross the lonely waters together.
Okay, but this raises a huge question for a very specific type of person.
Mm.
So what does this all mean for the person who absolutely hates asking for help?
Huh.
Because we all know someone who will bend over backwards to give to others. But the second they are struggling, they completely shut down and refuse assistance.
The program actually poses a brilliant self-reflection prompt about this exact dynamic. It asks us to examine why receiving generosity is so difficult for some of us.
I think for a lot of people, accepting help feels like admitting defeat.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a vulnerability, almost like confirming that whispering voice we talked about earlier that says, you are not enough, so you need someone else to prop you up.
Right. It stems from the ego wanting to maintain control and this sort of facade of absolute independence. But here is the beautiful flip side of that interdependence we just discussed. If you fiercely refuse to receive, you are actually blocking the flow of generosity in your community.
Oh, wow. Wait, because by refusing help, I am denying someone else the joy and literally the neurological benefits of giving.
Exactly. Think about it. If everyone in the Sangha only wanted to give and no one was ever willing to be vulnerable enough to receive, the entire system of connection would break down. Receiving openly, with grace, gratitude, and without guilt is itself an act of generosity. It allows the community to function. It allows those ropes of appropriate responses binding our rafts together to pull taut and actually secure us.
That is a massive perspective shift. It turns the act of receiving from a moment of perceived weakness into a vital act of communal strength. It all cycles back to the foundational idea of Chapter 3, an open heart, open hands, and an open mind.
It costs us nothing we cannot spare. Every open hand, every dropped defense, and every small kindness we offer to ourselves strengthens the vessel we are building. And as the program suggests, the more we practice this, the lighter the entire journey becomes.
I feel like we could spend hours just unpacking the nuances of those six dimensions alone. But this gives such a solid foundational understanding of why this is the very first step out of the static.
Definitely.
Now, for those of you listening who are realizing that it is time to start gathering your own materials and you want to explore this framework deeply, we have some crucial information for you. The concepts we've been discussing today come directly from the RAFT to Freedom Workbook, and it is written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen. And in an act of immense literal generosity, they are making the entire 66 chapters of this work freely available online.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It really is. You can find the complete program by going to the website at raft2freedom.org.
It is a remarkable resource. And as we prepare to close today's deep dive, I want to invite you to pause. Just sit for a moment with one of the journaling prompts provided directly in the program. Ask yourself, where does your sense of not enough show up most strongly in daily life? And how might a single act of generosity loosen its grip today? What plank of generosity will you lay down today?
Such a powerful question to carry with you. We'll leave you to mull that over, and we will close with the final quote from the end of the chapter. A thought to keep your hands and your heart open as you go about your day. Attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. Simone Weil.